This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 315 on the podcast today. Two CEOs for the price of one. I have CEO of Vast Resources, Roy Pitchford. Also have CEO of Nostra Terra, and that's Matt Lofgren. Matt's also director of Paternoster Resources, and they're both chatting about developments in their companies, which is quite nice. Also, micro news, and today's Penny Stock with Potential. But first, do you know what? A broker note went out today about Asia Met Resources. ARS is a ticker. I hold this company. And a while back, I did send out a sort of blog post on it in my Sunday newsletter. By all means, sign up at sharepickers.com. And I really have faith in this company. And I think a lot of people say, what do you look for in a small company? And put it this way, this company is trading at about 1.7 pence today, I think. The broker note has a target price of 9 pence based on their KSK asset, which is the first of the smaller assets. They've got two assets. One is a small one. One Butong is a massive. Well, it's small. It's not small. But compared to Butong, the second asset, it is small. But based on that asset alone, the first one, the smallest one, they've got a target price of 9 pence, which is a 5.5 bagger already, not including the Butong asset, which is four or five times as big, like I said. And you know what? Sometimes you believe in a company, and Tony Manini, the management there, he's done this before. This is his game. He's taken, you know, a small resource, small mine, when the commodity prices have been hammered, and he built it up from a $3 million company into a $6 billion company, Oxiana. So check that out. But what do you look for in a small company? And I've come up with a little acronym. I don't know if it works. It's what it does for me a little bit. And the acronym is CASH. What does it stand for? C stands for cash. Quite simple. When you look at a small company, always check on the balance sheet how much cash they have. Then check out how much they're burning. And work out how long that cash will last. Because when they get to the end, and they can't wait till the very end. And they can't wait to run out of cash before they do. So it's going to be a couple of, you know, 2-3 months before. They're going to have to raise some money. So make sure you look at the cash. Secondly, the A in cash. Assets. What assets do they have? And when you look at small companies, you know, if they're a small company struggling but they have huge assets, then there's something there they can trade with, you know? And I always like to see a nice big asset, like Asia Met, for example, got two cracking assets. And they've also got management there as well. The S in cash. And this is not essential, but I like it as a metric. Shares in issue and share ownership. Check out the share structure. All right. First of all, I like to look for companies under a billion shares in issue, and I like to see quite a high proportion of director holds and institution holds, and not a lot of free float around, you know. So check that out. Just look at the share structure, look at it all. And thirdly, the H. I'm struggling here a little bit. But the H is sound, but I think management's got to be involved some way. So the H stands for head honcho. What is it? Basically, the management. Look at the track record of the management. Now, all these, you know, the four boxes don't have to be ticked. But if they are, you're onto a good thing, I think. Cash, assets, share structure, shares an issue, and head honcho or management. Check that out. That's my take on it anyway. What do I know? But listen, sign up to my newsletter, and I'll be sending out a new stock every week. And like I said, Asia Met was my last stock. In fact, SQZ was my last one on Sunday. Check that out today. That is up 21.4%. I bought that at 8.99. It's now 11.75 pence. So I sent out, you know, information on stocks like that. In fact, what I'm annoyed at is it didn't buy more of that company. But normally when you buy a lot more, it normally goes down for a lot longer. So sign up to that, sharepickers.com. Joining me on the podcast right now is Matt Lofgren, Chief Executive Officer of Nostra Oil and Gas and Director of Paternoster Resources. Matt, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, a lot of people listen to the podcast, and some may be aware of your company or the companies you're involved with, maybe investors in them. There are others that have probably never heard of you at all. So give us, Matt, just a basic outline as to what you do with both companies and what the company is about in your own way.
Nostratera Oil and Gas. I'm the CEO of it. We've got most of our production out of the U.S. Actually, up to now, all of our production's out of the U.S. mid-continent, onshore U.S. in conventional reservoirs, but using the unconventional technology, the horizontal drilling and fracking. But again, conventional reservoirs. And Paternoster, I'm a director of, and that's a little investment company on AIM with what I think are some, you know, an exciting little portfolio.
Yeah. So how many stocks are in that portfolio?
Public stocks, we've got just about a half dozen.
Okay, cool. And you've recently had some news out, haven't you, regarding PRS, which is the ticker code for Paternoster. What was that?
The biggest profile one is Plutus Power Gen, PPG's move the last week or so, and then also New World. Paternoster happens to be the largest shareholder of PPG, and it's finally getting better understood. We're seeing that reflected in the share price in the last week, and so I'm happy to see that for our shareholders, but also for Plutus's in getting that understanding. But
let me just cut in there. PPG came on the podcast last week, and the share price was not doing a lot. And I'm not saying I was instrumental in this, but I chatted to Charles Tatnall.
Yeah.
And I was chatting to Charles, and I was really liking the sound of the company, the business model, everything about it. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to buy some shares in this company. The podcast went out. They're up by like almost like 9%, 10%. I thought, I'll let them come back a bit. And next day, they're up 12% again. I thought, what's going on here? So listen, if it's any reflection on the podcast, them coming on, explaining, because it helps. You know, people can read about a company in black and white, but when they hear a CEO on a podcast chatting how it works, it makes it a lot clearer, I think, you know? And I really like that business model. And I think, especially in the environment we're in the UK, where there's a deficit in power coming online and, you know, how old our power stations are, I think it's a company with a bright future. So that's nice to hear there. But in fact, let's move on now, because there's some exciting news. We have some questions, which we'll do in a bit, from investors and maybe people who want to be investors. They sent some questions in, so we'll go through those in a bit. But first and foremost, let's get the news of the day out the way as regards Nostratera. What is the news, Matt?
Well, we've in September we announced a JV with Independent Resources. That's IRG, AIM listed also. We announced a JV with them going into Egypt, Tunisia, focusing on existing producing assets, and we said in the RNS that we were already performing due diligence on several assets, and one of them in advanced stages. So the announcement here today is that we've gone and acquired our first asset within this JV. It's exciting for us. It's a big move for us. It's diversifying into another area outside of the U.S., and it's a prolific area in Egypt.
So you've got a few assets going on there. So why have you decided to go into another sort of agreement with in a different country, basically? Why are you doing this?
Well, I think the diversification is good, but globally, I mean, we're seeing issues in the oil and gas industry all around the world, obviously, and it's simply comes down to an imbalance in the supply and demand, where we've got excess supply that's caused mostly due to the horizontal drilling and fracking in the U.S. That balance is getting worked out. You're seeing all the rigs that are dropping and the supply that's dropping in the U.S. So that will get worked out. And I think everybody looks at the prices, and they all believe that prices are going up. It's just a question of when that everybody's debating. So anyway, for us, we think it's a great time to be investing. Everybody wants to buy low and sell high, and when it comes to assets, we're at a low. So it's a good chance for us to buy, a good chance for us to expand. When you're looking at existing producing assets, it gives you the ability to have something stable, not as opposed to exploration, but with these producing assets, you can leverage further. You can bring on financing at great rates, and so that's what we're doing here on this. Why Egypt? Egypt's an area similar to the U.S. It's prolific production. It's known. Oil and gas industry is very well established there. So the basins are well known. The people are very well educated. It's an industry that's very well set. That said, there's also been one of the largest discoveries in the world, for that matter, in the last so many years, that just happened. That was just announced in Egypt last month.
Okay, so take us through the deal there. What's how much is it costing? What's the reserves? What's kind of, you know? I mean, is this immediate? Is this cash flow? Will it?
Yeah, it is. It is immediate.
Okay, so the take us through the finances on this.
What we're doing is we're acquiring the field itself. The license is producing 880 barrels a day, approximately, and we're acquiring 50% interest in that field. The JV is acquiring 50% interest in that field, and so of that, we're getting about 440 barrels a day net to the JV. Half of that being to NTOG. The reserves are estimated over 1 million barrels for that 50%, and there's also a base from there to grow within that particular asset with further exploration.
So that's good, isn't it? I mean, that's the good news. Straight away, you're up and running there in Egypt. I mean, do you foresee any problems, or is this a done deal? Is this going ahead?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't closed yet. We anticipate closing later this month, but we feel very comfortable on it.
And how are you paying for this? Is it all cash? Is it shares? What's happening there? Are you raising money?
No, we're not raising money. We're using cash and existing facilities.
Okay, cool. How much does it cost? I mean, is it profitable to produce all in current environment now?
Further to the acquisition, the cost is $3.5 million to the JV. The other thing that we've done is we've got the seller to finance of the $3.5 million. They're taking a note back for $2.5 million, so that leaves us only $1 million US on the acquisition or cash outlay. And the other $2.5 million is deferred for 2 years.
Wow! So, are you quite excited about this, Matt?
It's if you look at the actual cash out of pocket, it's a very very low cost way for us to leverage into something much larger. We think there's operational improvement that can change things significantly, and then other upside from the existing asset, but also from the exploration on the asset.
All right, and when does this start? When do you start seeing cash from this?
Immediately.
Well, there we are. That's an excellent question. So, before we go on to the questions here, is there anything else you just want to explain about this deal? You've pretty much explained why you've done it, but is there anything else that we've not covered off here? I mean, obviously, in the RNS you'll be releasing, they're all the details for people to read there, but is there anything that sticks out in your mind that you think you'd like to highlight to investors or potential investors?
Well, primarily the safety of going in and acquiring an existing producing asset as opposed to exploration. I mean, traditionally, what you see are people who spend money on licenses and leases, and then after that, they'll turn around and after their geology and their acquisition, seismic, et cetera, after that, they turn around and drill new wells and hope to find production. We're acquiring the existing producing asset with further upside. So that makes it a lot safer. Again, because of that, the focus you're able to leverage, in a down market, a down cycle like this, this is what oil companies, they look for. This is where they prefer to be. But execution of that's another matter. And it's very difficult for a lot of people to get that done, especially since so many people are chasing that.
All right, well, let's move on to some questions from some investors or potential investors that are sent in for you, Matt. First and foremost, a question I don't think anyone can answer. I mean, I can answer it, but not accurately. First and foremost, do you see improvement in the oil price? And it doesn't say on what time span. I mean, what do you think? I mean, you just suggested there, I mean, the rig count's going down. We know that in North America. When do you think this will reflect in the oil price?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the two questions right there. Do I see an improvement in the oil price? And the answer is definitely. When is the big question? I can speculate on whether it's going to, we'll start to see that in 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. I don't know where it's going to be. I have an idea, but that doesn't really reflect my investment decision. I think the thing to do, again, is regardless of where the time, now's the time to be buying. When there's blood on the streets, when people are scared, when they're hiding back in their shells and they're not making moves, now's the time to be acquiring these assets, because we all know it's going to go up. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, do you know what? I send out a newsletter once a week, and recently I've been focusing on, I highlight, you know, one company every week. And recently I've been, you know, sending out stocks that I believe are undervalued, and most of them are in oil, gas, or mining, you know, and exploration. And I had a couple of emails saying, why have you all of a sudden gone from big cap stocks to small cap stocks in this area? And I said, well, simply two reasons. Firstly, companies in this sector have been hammered for a couple of years now, and I think we're nearing, it's hard to put a time frame on it, but I think we're nearing the bottom of the cycle, this is the time to buy. And secondly, there's no other sector, apart from maybe biopharma, that has the explosive upside of this sector, does it? I mean, when things start to roll, they really roll, don't they?
I think one of the ways to put it is, it's not a matter of the valuation; it's about the liquidity. Now, taking that further, it's not just the oil and gas; it is the mining. But the combination of these two, you're right. I mean, when they do go, they go.
Okay. So, is a question you can't answer, I suppose, but I'll put it to you anyway. Where will the share price be in a year's time? I'm assuming this is Nostra rather than Patent Nostra.
That's obviously it's very difficult, if not impossible, to guess on that. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to build the asset base of the company more stable, focusing on the cash flow and growing that. So we're better positioned when things do turn, for that matter. So if you look at the companies, again, I mean, investors in general are always trying to buy low and sell high. And here we are trying to buy assets leveraged, so it minimizes dilution. So we can buy assets low and sell high. In that sense, when you look at where we're going to be growing, this is another step of our growth during a down cycle. If we can continue on this path, I think shareholders should be happy, and they should be, hopefully noticing that and respecting that prior to any turn in the cycle.
Marvelous. All right, next question. What's the rationale behind Patent Nostra Resources' $250,000 investment in New World Oil and Gas?
We see New World as an interesting opportunity. We believe it's a good investment for our shareholders. The company's at a crossroad. We felt the timing of the investment was just right. And, so we're happy with that.
And also, it's a follow-up here. It says, is this purchase in support of the Adam Reynolds or the Shareholder Action Group or the current board? I mean, who are you backing here?
Well, we haven't said that, obviously. We want to do what's right for the shareholders. We're going to work through the process and make sure everything's done the right way. Every option is open at this point.
Do you see upside either way it goes or not?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, next question. When will NTOG...
I think there's always a chance of downside. That's the risk that we're in. But I do think the path of least resistance is up.
Yeah. So, I mean, can you say which side you'd prefer to go on? Which way you'd prefer to go or not?
It's not right for us to say that right now.
Okay. When will NTOG drill White Buffalo?
Well, White Buffalo is an acquisition we made just about a year ago in Wyoming. It's an exploration project that with an area that hasn't seen modern technology. And what you're seeing in the industry worldwide right now is very few companies, if any, are spending money on exploration. They're focusing on doing everything they can to hold on to their existing assets and work on any improvements on their existing production without going into further exploration. So right now we're not going to be drilling that. When the price improves and is holding at a nicer level, that's when we'll move into exploring that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The good news there, though, is we've got time on our leases. We're not, we're not up against the wall on that. We've got leases that were 5-year leases with several year extensions on all these leases. So we've got plenty of time.
Yeah, I can't see the oil price staying this low for 5 years, because that will take out most of the industry. Yeah, and I think the longer it does stay low for, obviously, the more upside in the oil price, I think, anyway. But does Nostra need to raise funds via dilution in 2015 or 16?
No. I mean, right now we don't need to. I'm not going to rule it out. I'll never rule it out. I think when people say that, they're putting themselves in a corner. So no, I'm not. I'm never going to say it won't happen. But we don't need to.
Okay, but the JV doing Egypt, that doesn't need dilution, does it?
No, we've got existing cash, and like I said, we've got facilities that we're using as well.
Okay. When might the next acquisition come after the current one we're expecting? So I suppose, you know, because you did mention the Egypt acquisition in the last RNS, you didn't put the details in that, but I assume this person is assuming you're looking elsewhere. Are you still on the lookout, Matt, for other things?
I would imagine this question is you know, because the question was received Friday or over the weekend, that they didn't have the information about this purchase. So there you go. There's your first answer. Here's your acquisition right now that increases production and the amount of production as well. So that production, by the way, with this acquisition, it trebles ours. It's approximately three times our production, our existing production, with this acquisition. So that's a significant change. As to your follow-on to that, other acquisitions, as we said in the previous RNS, we are performing due diligence on several assets right now.
Cool. You've mentioned this, but I'll just go over it again. How much will the new producing assets in Egypt be producing in terms of barrels of oil per day? And did you say this 880, I think it's JV, so it's about 400. So it's about 200 odd to you, is it? Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Our immediate focus after the acquisition here is on the operational side of things. So we're going to go through with our partner in the field and go through everything on the operational side before we look at drilling any additional wells. We do think there's upside from the JV management side of things, as well as in the field within the different wells work that can be done that doesn't include new wells at this time. So the new wells will follow on that.
Marvelous. Earlier this year, you tweeted an image of a free-flowing well that was gushing nicely. After that, there was no more news. What happened? Do you remember that? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a well that we had in South Texas. It was a good sign. It was something that you're happy to see if you can see that before putting a pump on. That acquisition was of a small interest in South Texas. It was a very small cost to us, and it was giving us a chance to see this new area, this new way that they were going in, and you know, we're still evaluating it at this point.
Okay, next one. When does the Nostra Terra bank facility end? Will it be renewed?
It's a revolving facility. So okay. It doesn't necessarily end, and that answers the renewal question as well.
Yeah, yeah. Have you an operator license yet? You've been trying for a while.
We've been an operator in Kansas. We're in the process of getting one in Wyoming. We haven't been trying for a while. It's been on the list of things that we've been doing. And when we slowed down the White Buffalo, we had slowed down on getting the license. It obviously isn't required at that point. We can still do other work in the field without the license. You only need that when you're drilling. However, on the Pawpaw prospect, we are moving forward at this point. So we're working on the license.
Okay.
And that's specific to Wyoming.
Some of these questions, I'm not sure how accurate they are. I'll put them to you. You can. It's up to you. Say, you know, no comment, or I don't know what they're talking about, because I have no idea if they're accurate or anyway. But this one says, you associate with bloggers who seem to continually go against your morals. Is that right?
I'm not sure who they're referring to, but there's all sorts of bloggers out there, and I don't have a problem talking to anybody who wants to talk about the company, whether it's you know, good, bad, or indifferent. If they've got questions, if they want to say something, but I'm not sure what that means as far as an association. I'm not aligned with anybody. I don't work with anybody. You know, anybody who wants to ask questions and try and put some news out there for our shareholders, I'm happy to talk to.
The share price was collapsing before the oil price declined. Do you know why?
No, I'm not sure that that's fair. I think if you look at our share price and you compare it against our peers, you know, when you look at the production and the performance for each company, they're all pretty well aligned.
Next question, and I think you can answer this now. When are you going to give us something that will shove up that share price? And, well, you know.
Tripling production, significant increase in revenue, non-dilutive. How about that?
Exactly. Okay, this is the last one, Matt. It's the toughest, all right, of all of them. Matt, 5 years in charge and revenue barely covers admin costs. Is it fair to say that Nostrata will never generate a return for shareholders based on this performance, given that oil prices have been high for most of the last 5 years?
No, first off, when I took over the company, it was a day from it going into administration. It had 2 million debt and 1,000 pounds cash in the bank. So, that was a chore taking that on from the beginning. What we've done is we've been very conservative and probably too conservative in our approach, where our focus was to get to the point where we had covered off that debt and grow our production. We didn't take risks on a single well, a single prospect, hoping for some big discovery, and it changes everything. And if you don't have that, you're done and dusted. And you've seen that with a lot of companies, a lot of exploration production companies, where people get hyped and excited about where they're going and what they're doing, and then all of a sudden the first well comes in, it's dry, and the company's out of cash, and they're done. So we went a different approach. We were slower in our approach and more cautious even at that. But we did get to the point that we were cash flow positive at the end of last year. We had doubled our production in the fourth quarter of last year, the same time that oil had dropped in half. So, our timing, I don't know if you could say that's good or bad. It's good that we got there, but bad that it was right at the end of it. So, it was a safer approach up to that point. Now, what we've done is we've not only signaled our intention, but we're making bigger moves to grow in a quicker, a bigger fashion. We brought on Ewan Ainsworth, who is the former CFO for Gulf Keystone. So you're going from a company who's one of the largest oil and gas companies on AIM, and their FD becomes our chairman, who is helping us, guide us and where we're going right now. Following on that, we've got this acquisition with Koch Industries in the U.S. Again, the second largest private company in the U.S. So, that should signal something as far as our capabilities and the trust we're getting from them. And then here we are in Egypt in this announcement that we've just done, where it's a significant increase in our production, our revenues, and it's a big base to grow from. I mean, that's something that I think should be understood. When you have a much larger base, your production is already there in a much larger fashion, your percentage increases can have a bigger impact, obviously. So that's something to remember.
Yeah, well, it seems like you are improving the company and diversification of it. I mean, unluckily, no one saw that oil price, collapse last year. I mean, no one saw that coming at all. And like I said, several companies have gone to the wall. The fact that you're still sort of expanding and looking for new opportunities, speaks volumes. So, in the timescale now of Nostra, I mean, do you feel you are getting some traction and it's just a matter of time because the oil price has been hammered? Do you think, are you confident now that you are going in the right direction? And the company is going, it's going to generate value for shareholders, essentially.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about what we're doing right now. I think the moves that we've been making, what we've been working on, and you're starting to see that demonstrated here with this acquisition. I think we're headed in a really good direction, where I'm excited about that. Again, I mean, a lot of companies, you look at where they are in this environment, and they're like a deer in headlights. They're stuck still. They're not sure what they're going to do, and they're not doing anything. So as some of these companies are hurt, they've got too much debt. Other companies are sitting there not sure, and they're not making any moves. Now's the time, in my opinion, to be acquiring assets on the cheap.
Yeah, well, Matt, you've covered off all the questions there, I think, confidently and succinctly, and so it's nice to do that. And, it's a mark of someone who knows, who's confident in their position and their company when they're not scared to head up these questions. Well, it's nice. Do you know, Matt, what annoys me about you, though, just before we came on to record now, I mean, it is cold and wet over here. You told me, you've been playing football, well, soccer, as you say, in 100-degree heat.
Well, yesterday, yeah. I've been in the last month, I've been in five deserts.
Wow.
I've been in London in between, but I've been in five different deserts, and I've been fortunate to play football in four of the five deserts.
Cool.
One of them on the base here with the Egyptians of this asset that we're acquiring. I was out doing due diligence on a site visit, and every base out there in the Western Desert, every company with their own base has a pitch in the middle of it. And you know, I mean, it's certainly not you don't benefit from the rain that you're complaining about with the green grass everywhere and you know, a nice pitch, and you're talking about sand, dirt, and and rocks all mixed in, playing with Bedouin that are bare feet and you know, got skills and quick as can be, and then your local Egyptians who are also very skilled, and it's a lot of fun. But I've been able to do that you know, in the middle of work or at the end of a day of hard work, and it's you know, it's been a nice treat to add to it.
That must be nice to break down the barriers there. It's amazing, you know, football, a sport, is truly international, isn't it? And it, you know, at the end of the day, we all say there's communication problems, it's all different cultures. But if, you know, playing football, it must break the ice there. Or, I mean, obviously no ice in Egypt, but I mean, it must, you know, go a long way to building relationships, does it?
I think so. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, they take you on a personal level. They realize that you're regular people, and but you know, specific to these guys and where we are, they're all very highly educated. They know the industry. They you know, they're great people to be around in general. It's just a nice touch when you have the football.
Marvelous, Matt. It's lovely to talk to you. Thanks for coming on. And listen, come on again when you. I'm sure it won't be long before you have some more exciting news coming out. So come on again and share that with us.
All right, Justin, I appreciate it.
Okay, it's time for the macro news. The UK news sales have registered their highest level, this is car sales, for September on record, with gains in private fleet and business sales. The month saw 462,000 cars registered, up 8.6% on last year. And car sales have now increased 43 months in a row, the SMMT said, which is the trade body there. And March this year saw the highest monthly level of new car sales this century. Yeah, but you know what? Volkswagen sorted that out, didn't they? They put, you know, put an end to that. Nice one. Germans, hey! And British house prices fell by 0.9% in September from August, when prices showed a surprising strong leap. Mortgage lender Halifax said, on year terms, price growth slowed to 8.6% in the 3 months to September, down from 9%, but still up though, isn't it? And economists taking part in a Reuters poll had expected prices to rise by a monthly 0.1% in September to take the annual increase to 9%, but it's still up 8.6%. That's not bad, is it? Joining me on the podcast right now is Vast Resources Chief Executive Officer Roy Pitchford. Thanks for coming on, Roy.
Pleasure. Nice to be here.
Right, so Roy, first and foremost, I've had a lot of requests from people to get you on the podcast, which is quite nice. There's a lot of people who have faith in your company. But there are people listening, obviously, who have probably never heard of Vast. So can you give us a quick background as to what you do at Vast there?
Surely, Justin. Yeah, the company started off as African Consolidated Resources, and its main emphasis was in Zimbabwe, and its biggest call to fame was the Marenge diamond claims that it came up with, and the discovery of the Marenge alluvial diamonds that were then appropriated by the state, and there was a massive court case and interaction with the state, and that's still an ongoing issue. It was also mainly a junior company focused on exploration, with the hope of proving up resources that it could one day sell to the majors. The model was quite good up until about 2009, and the ability to sell discoveries to the majors disappeared when the recession set in. The company continued to look for things, and it came up with a very large portfolio of assets in Zimbabwe and Zambia. And the cost of keeping this portfolio of exploration assets became exorbitant when the fees were put up dramatically in Zimbabwe. And so a lot of the exploration properties that the money had been invested in over the years went to forfeiture or were abandoned. And towards the end of 2013, the beginning of 2014, some of the shareholders felt that the company needed to change direction and do something different. And there was a bit of a shareholder coup, and the management and board of the company were restructured. A lot of the directors and management left, and I was asked to come out of semi-retirement and take up residence in Zimbabwe to try and sort the company out and get it going. My wife and I went back to Zimbabwe because we're from Zimbabwe, and we basically converted the company from being an exploration company and looked at making it a production company. We sold the head office in Harare. We terminated the exploration division or department, and we set about looking to raise finance for our primary project in Zimbabwe called the Pixton Peerless Gold Mine, next door the giant gold mine. And when I went around the city of London to try and raise money for Zimbabwe, I just drew a blank. There was virtually no interest by anybody in investing in Zimbabwe. So I went back, and instead we got a local consortium to come in to provide development capital for the Pixton Peerless Mine, albeit a very much smaller operation than we first envisaged. But we got funding, and we set about developing that mine. And with the proceeds from the sale of the head office, the sale of the exploration aircraft, and some money from the shareholders, I then had a look at the Romanian assets that the company had put its foot on. Originally, the view was that Romania would be something that we would get rid of at the earliest opportunity. But having come over here to Romania and have a look at what's going on, it was evident to me that Romania provided a huge amount of opportunity. And we then developed our properties here. We raised money, and we've now started production in Romania in our first polymetallic mine. We will be doing a second one fairly soon, and we're looking at opportunities in Romania. The main focus all along has been the big state mining company called Remin that previously operated 55 large precious and polymetallic mines. And we've had a memorandum of understanding with this company. We've done a high-level due diligence, and we are looking to have or waiting for the laws and regulations in Romania to be amended that will facilitate acquisition of these mines. But in the meantime, we are developing privately owned operations that were previously part of the state but were privatized some years ago. And the management hasn't been what it should be, and there hasn't been enough CapEx investment. So by bringing appropriate management and further investment, we are getting involved with these mines, getting to know the country, getting some runs on the board, and getting ourselves into a position where we can sensibly look at these larger state mines when the regulations change. So that's really, the transformation that's happened in the company from a junior explorer to a junior producer.
Okay, so you got two or three assets you said you had?
We have the gold mine in Zimbabwe. We have a polymetallic mine in Zimbabwe, in Romania, operational. We've got a second polymetallic mine in Romania that we will be getting operational as soon as the license comes through. And then we're looking at other smaller opportunities in Romania whilst we wait for the change of regulation that will enable us to look at the larger mines that still belong to the state.
And that regulation, I mean, is that going to be quite straightforward? Do you see that happening or in your favour, or is it a bit of a hurdle, a stumbling block there?
It's something that the government of Romania wants to do. It's quite complex. There's a lot of changes and new ideas that have to be brought in. What they really need to do is to align the mining regulations in Romania to what you would expect to find in Zimbabwe or Australia or these other countries. The state recognizes that, but it's not an easy process to change. It is being worked on, and I think it's something that will come through fairly soon.
Okay. All right. Well, Roy, we've had, like I said earlier, we've had quite a few questions from investors in VAR. So I'm going to run through them here. If you're stuck, don't worry. We'll move on to the next one. But let's start with the first question. It says, how many mines do you see VAR operating in 2 years' time?
I would imagine that we would have 3 mines in Romania and 1 in Zimbabwe at this stage.
Okay. Next question. Estimated market cap in 2 years' time. So what are you at now? Is it 18? Around about 18 market caps, yes.
About 20. I think we're at 21 million at the moment. I would think our share price in 2 years' time should be at least 3 or 4p. But it depends on what happens in the international economy, in the world economy. You know, if metal prices pick up, it could be more. If metal prices are still in the doldrums, it could be less. You know, predicting the share price in 2 years' time, somebody's got to tell me what the world economy will be like in 2 years' time. I don't think anybody can.
No, I mean, do you see, I mean, the environment at the moment, obviously, is there's low commodity prices across the board there. But do you have an opinion on how long it'll stay this low? Or do you see a recovery happening in the next a year, 18 months, 2 years, 5 years? I mean, do you have any opinion at all on that?
Well, yeah, my view is that if we look at base metals, we've already seen a number of projects being put on the shelf. We're seeing production being stopped. I look at Zambia and the copper mines there, and the big players that are being responsible and curtailing production and therefore supply. I think if the copper price goes any lower, more mines will be put under pressure, and the supply will dry up. So that's positive, and the world economy picks up. You know, we all look at China, but we got to understand what's happening in Europe and the Americas. We just won't stay in the doldrums forever. It will pick up, and when it does, it's going to take a while for the supply to pick up. And so, I believe the base metals will probably have a reasonable run in the not too distant future.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, right now, when we are in the doldrums, when there's no sight on the horizon of a recovery, it's a good time for a long-term investor. It's a good time to invest, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because you're picking up assets at a massive discount, and because it's not an easy environment to operate in Romania. There are not a lot of people competing with us. We have some unique advantages here with my local staff and their access to data, etc., understanding the laws. Because there's not a huge number of mining companies operating in Romania, when you do identify something that is of interest and you want to negotiate for it, the seller doesn't have a huge number of people that are interested in the property. Very often you are the sole person that they have an opportunity to sell to. So, you know, the price is generally very competitive. So yeah. Now's the time to get stuck into Romania before the regulations change and it's easier for people to compete in the country. And also when the commodity prices are down, it's the perfect time to be establishing yourself in a country like Romania.
Okay, next question. Is Vast still interested in acquiring the Dalny mine? Is it Dalny?
Dalny mine, yes. Very much so, depending on the ability to raise the finance. The Dalny mine is well known to me. It used to belong to a company that I operated some time ago called Central African Gold. We sold the group of mines to the current owners, New Dawn. So it's a mine that I know a lot about, and I have views as to what can be done to restore it. Interestingly enough, originally we were going to truck ore from our Pixton Peerless mine and use the processing facilities at Dalny, but I wasn't able to raise the finance. I note now that Rio Zoom is doing exactly the same thing with its Cam and Motor mine. It's developed the open cast mine, and whilst it's building its processing facilities, it's trucking all through to Dalny and processing it at the Dalny mine. So the concept has been shown to be sound, and it's something that I'd like to look at in the future if we had sufficient financial resources.
Yeah, and when you say in the future, how far is that in the future?
Oh, yeah. How long's the piece of string? I'd like to be in a position to do something in the next 24 months there. The other thing that we've got to see in Zimbabwe is a more friendly foreign investor climate at the moment with this 51% indigenization. It's very difficult to get anybody interested in investing in Zimbabwe. So it's something we're engaging with government, and we need to work through.
Yeah, well, and do you see that changing or not? I mean, in the near future?
I do. I think pragmatism will prevail. We've already seen rethinking on the indigenization on commercial and trading facilities and operations. I think sense will prevail, and a more foreign investor friendly climate will prevail.
Okay. Next question. What progress is being made with the 2015 drill program, and when are results likely to be announced?
Well, I'm not sure what drill program is being referred to, because we're not drilling anything at the moment. So I just don't know what that refers to.
Okay, we'll scratch that one then. Next one. Next question. What are the key operational risks, and what are the mitigation actions in place to manage them?
Well, the main operational risk that we have is the price of the metals. And, the only mitigation that we can do is to make sure that we are a low-cost producer in the bottom quartile as far as costs are concerned. And, you can see from our results that we've reduced our overhead costs quite dramatically. And it's a focus wherever we operate, both in Zimbabwe and Romania, to keep costs to an absolute minimum, because we can't affect the price. We can only control or try and control the costs.
Okay, there's a question that's related to that in some way. Apparently this person tried to find the cost, but they couldn't find it. So what is the cost of production on the two mines?
Well, it's early days yet. And, what we've said at the Baeta Ply mine, we expect the cost per ton mined and processed to be around about $80, but the Romanian management think that that's a bit high, because we've used the kind of wages and salaries, etc., that you'd expect to pay in maybe Australia or South Africa, whereas they are somewhat more modest in Romania. So we should be less than $80 a ton on the underground mine. On the open cast mine, it's cheaper. We're looking at $60-odd, but again, that's probably got a bit of fat in it. We've only been operating the open cast mine now for a month, just over. So we haven't got an indication of a steady state cost for mining there, and we'll only know once we get Baeta Ply going whether we're going to achieve the reduction below $80 a tonne. So early days, but you know, between up to 80 on the underground mine and up to 60 on the open cast mine. But the Romanians believe it'll be less than that.
Marvellous. Okay, next question. When is the most likely time you will look for a large JV farming partner to expand Romania?
Well, when we get involved with the Rumin SA assets, they are enormous mines. As I said, there's 55 of them, and I don't believe for 1 minute that we'll be able to address all 55. I know we won't. We've done our due diligence. There's four or five that we would target initially, but being quite substantially bigger than we are at the moment, in order to address them, they're going to have a big brother to come in, both financially and technically. And I reckon and I hope that within 2 years we will need to be doing that.
Okay, good. And last question, Roy, and this is anyone's guess, really. Why do you think the share price has dropped so much recently?
You know, if I had the answer to that, I'd be very, very rich. It just doesn't make sense. We believe that people have bought on rumor and they've sold on fact. So we saw the build-up prior to the announcement of the first production at Manila Polymetallic Mine and the first production at Peerless Pixton. And the moment we announced these two milestones, our share price just fell out of bed. And the best experts are still scratching their heads. They don't understand why. But the best explanation is, you know, buy on rumor and sell on fact. This is the only thing that I can think of. We do know a lot of people came in at the various placements, which were much lower, and you know, within a couple of months, they've made 50% or more in their money. They've banked it. I have had a few shareholders say, "Well, they've sold it one. They sold it 210." And they've now bought back at 150, 1.5, 1.6. So there's a bit of that as well. You know, you sell it, you know that's going to go down, you buy back and you get more shares for the amount of money. But yeah, other than that, it's a bit mystifying as to why it's happened.
Yeah, well, I saw, I know a couple of people who are, you know, fans of Vast and the holders of the stock on Twitter after the last update you did, and they couldn't understand why it dropped either. And it must be that people just short-term traders basically jumping in and jumping out quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no fundamental reason there for it. So that's good to know. So, Roy, just as a wrap-up, as a summary, if you can give three reasons why an investor should invest in Vast Resources.
Well, one is that we're operating in two quite challenging jurisdictions, Zimbabwe and Romania. As I said earlier, we do not have a lot of competition, and therefore we are acquiring and accessing mineral resources at a huge discount. And when both countries sort out their economic challenges, when the laws change, etc., and the international community or economy picks up, these assets are going to be re-rated quite significantly, in my view. So it's because of where we're operating and the fact that we're picking up assets at a discount, it augurs well for the future for re-rating. Secondly, we've got experience of operating in these areas. You know, if you look at the past background of Zimbabwe Platinum, of African Platinum, where we developed these assets and then we were taken out by a major company, the multiple effect for the investors was quite significant. And I think the opportunity to do the same in Vast is there. What else? Third reason for investing.
It's got to be the management, Roy, isn't it?
Yeah, one has to be modest. I'm pleased you brought it up. a committed management and chaps who really enjoy what they're doing are prepared to roll up their sleeves and get stuck in. I've relocated from the United Kingdom to Romania, to Bucharest, primarily to get a better understanding of how things operate here. It's a different law system to Zimbabwe and the United Kingdom. I need to get to know people here. Zimbabwe, I've operated in most of my life, so I know the law, I know the people, I know the government, I know everybody. But in Romania, it's a learning curve, and the best way to do that is to come and live here. So my wife and I have relocated to Bucharest, and we're getting immersed into the situation here, into the mining communities in the Transylvania area where the mines are. And, you know, when you actually there and on the ground and understand what's going on, it's better able to direct the directions or the decisions you need to make, and to be able to explain things to both your board and investors.
Roy, that is three fantastic facts. Thanks very much, and reasons to invest. And it's been nice chatting to you. And do me a favour, come back on again when you've got some more news you'd like to share with investors. Thanks very much, Roy.
Thank you, and hopefully it won't be too long before we will be back.
And here's today's penny stock with potential, suggested by Zedcars. By all means, you can suggest this. This is where you can get involved, and if you think you know of a penny stock that has lots of potential, please suggest it. So, it's suggested by Zedcars, BMR Barclay Mineral Resources. That's BMR, it's a ticker code. What does the company do? It processes zinc, lead tailing dumps. Would you say this is a short, medium-term punt or long-term investment? Short, medium, and long-term. All right, ticking all three boxes. How many shares does the company have in issue? 132 million, which is not a lot. What's the current price and market cap of this company? Now, this was suggested last week, so let me just check this out to update it, because I know it had a big shift in price last week, and it announced some news. There's some results out. Oh, start of the week, I think. There's some results out, and they shot up. But they are down today, minus 2.38%, and they're at 5.125 pence. So, yeah, pretty much. They've shot up quite largely, hugely. Surge! Name three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, on the verge of processing 80 years lead and zinc dumps. Most toxic in Africa, the most toxic dumps in Africa, and no debts, low outlay, lowest producer, and owns patents. Number three, new chairman Alex Borelli, of course, of Tiger, Metal Tiger as well. Alex Borelli's in. So, that's BMR as ticker, Barclay Mineral Resources. By all means, please suggest one. Like I said, go to sharepickers.com, click the link if you know of a penny stock with potential, and I could feature it in the next few days. And by all means, listen, if you want the podcast dedicated to you, I'll mention you. You can have a podcast dedicated to you. All you need to do is go to iTunes, give me a 5-star rating, a nice review, write anything. You know, if you listen to this so much, to this podcast, are you listening to this bit, because it's quite a way down the podcast, then you're obviously getting something out of it, unless you just let it play on its own in the background somewhere. But if you do get something out of it, please leave me a little rating, and I say little, 5-star, and review on iTunes, and I will read out your dedication and dedicate it to you on the next podcast. Don't forget, please, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation here in the podcast. It's only opinion. Please do your own research, as it's your own money. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADBFN Podcast with Justin Waite.